Connection! Connection!
Welcome to Connection. You're listening to Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring by Johann Sebastian Bach. You'll find out why we're listening when we hear from two artists who, like Bach, are struggling to express themselves and their faith through art. Two artists struggling to revive the symbols of Christianity in our daily lives. You'll also hear from a woman taking her faith into the nuclear energy controversy. Today on Connection.
Connection!
We'll be back with Christian artists Bill Hines and Jane McKinney talking about connecting their faith, their art, and other people in a moment. You're listening to Connection. The music you heard at the beginning of the program may be familiar to you in one form or another. Bach's Cantata 147 or Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring. There was a time when the idea of religious art would have been unthinkable. All art was religious art. The work of Mozart, Bach, Leonardo da Vinci, Michelangelo, the art of a great many musicians, painters, sculptors, artists of all types, for a long time in our cultural history, was art dedicated to the glory of God. To make a distinction between religious art and secular art would have made no sense at all to those men. But now we do make a distinction. Many things have changed our attitudes about art and religion. Because art reflects our lives, or at least what we want our lives to be, some artists are attempting to revive the symbols of our Christian faith through their art, to make these symbols come alive for us. Christianity is rich in symbols, but quite often, many are not well understood. The fish, the dove and the lamb, the triangle, the circle and the star, the cross. The epic stories and simple parables of the Bible, all of these were intended to help us better understand the meaning of a contemporary Christian life. Sometimes they don't. Connection talked with Bill Hines, pastor of First United Methodist Church in Sydney, Ohio, about his artwork and about Christian symbols. Bill portrays in wood sculpture scenes and characters from the Bible. He hopes to help people through his art to make a personal connection between the God of history and the God of their daily lives.
As you do your artwork and as you try to express what the story is or what the message is, that naturally there are going to be symbols that are developed in there, and they're going to be supportive of what is already there. And I don't look upon it as a development of anything particularly new. It's trying to say the old things, and perhaps through someone else's mind or in a new way, so that persons will begin to realize that that truth is eternal. It stretches to the past and it stretches to the future. And we're at a point in time where we look at a piece of artwork and pick that eternal truth up. But I want to say something more. I want to say that there's a reality behind the symbols that is more than what the symbols are. I think some people look at symbols and see no reality. There's an educational process that has to go in. And I think art ought to be educational as well as an expression of just experiencing something beautiful. Ought to be educational things to it also, to educate our children about what the past has had and how God has met people in the past, how he has expressed himself to them in the past, and how he touches us today and how he'll touch us in the future, perhaps. In that sense, I find a value in art. It creates that possibility of saying, this is what it means. And I think that's really the key. And that's where symbols come to have their meaning, and that's where the depth of our experiences in the explanation, as we're trying to explain them, people begin to communicate and they begin to sense what's happening, and I think that's where things happen.
Things do happen when people encounter eternal truths made accessible through art. This is Connection, and we'll return with more from Bill Hines and a young lady who met Jesus in an unusual way while portraying the Christ figure in wood.
I know that you are so weary, and you've tried your very best. I know things have been so dreary, and you need to take a rest. Problems, they have been so many, coming at you from all sides. Everything has seemed to falter. Happiness has been denied. Lay them down, brother, lay them down. Peace of mind seems now so distant, and you're needing for a friend. Communication is the answer, and I'm offering my hand. Please don't turn my hand away now, 'cause I need it bad as you. Let me try my best to help us, yeah, understand what we should do. Lay them down, brother, lay them down. Sing them out, sister, sing them out. Let them go, brother, let them flow. Sing them out.
He's 7.5 feet tall, and he has a 6-foot arm spread. And it took me 7 months to make him.
This is Connection. We're talking to Jane Allen McKinney in the library of Skerritt College in Nashville, Tennessee. She's describing her sculpture of the crucifixion.
I wanted to think about my theology more and make Jesus as a person come alive in something that I could share with other people. And I wanted to share my faith, and I felt the best way to share my faith was not to talk to the people, but to make something, because I did art anyway, and I felt that would be the strongest thing I could do, or the most, you know, forward thing, because when you make art, people either look at it or they walk away.
People don't walk away. The sculpture draws people to it, to look, and to touch. As Jane worked with the piece with her hands, she felt like she was touching Jesus, and like he was touching her.
Wow, you know, this really is a real person that lived once. This is wood here, but there was a person that people touched. when you look at the piece, you could tell that, like, I'm only 5'5", and the sculpture's 7.5. You can kind of curl up beside the sculpture piece very easily, and it feels very human. Even though it's not, it's really very comforting. And it made me think, wow, it would have really been nice to have been around when Jesus was around. Because I just feel like to look in his eyes or to touch his hand or anything, he has just been the type of person that, you know, when some people touch you, it's just like there's a real warmth. It's very personal. You know they love you even though they just put their hand on your shoulder or something.
Albert Einstein once said that art is the expression of the profoundest thoughts in the simplest way. The doing of art and the appreciation of an art piece is a way to make profound thoughts real to us, to make concrete those things we feel in our hearts.
In primitive sculptures and cultures, the individuals have to see their gods. And I can understand that, because it's very hard to talk to something you can't see. And I know that this is sculpture, and I know this is wood, and that's very clear in my own mind. But it is so much easier to have conversations and to think about God and think about Jesus when you're making something that's physical.
In creating a sculpture of Jesus, Jane thought long and hard about the danger of idolatry. There's the risk that the symbol will become the thing itself rather than a way of getting to an intangible spiritual truth.
I was afraid people would look at it as an idol, and I didn't want them to do that. This to me is not an idol. This is actually a piece of wood. It's a sculpture. But because of what I did and because I was the one that made it, for me, it helped me work through things with myself. It presented opportunities for me to investigate my faith, to talk with Jesus about what I thought and what I did every day. So it's not an idol. It's just something that I did and something people can look at that helps them, I hope, to think.
Jane made the piece by gluing together pre-cut pieces of 3/4-inch plywood and smoothing the outside with a grinder. Few people viewing the sculpture know that while Jane worked, she wrote her feelings and thoughts on the layers of plywood as letters to Jesus, sealing them into the figure. She shared with us a portion of those thoughts and feelings now locked within the sculpture of Jesus.
I knew you were always with us, but I allowed and didn't seem to mind. Being projected into a physical touch me, feel me peace, my sculpture. I felt very close to you because I was a part of you. I made you. I was in a relationship to you. I could feel you emotionally with the joys and the struggles, the fear of failure, which seemed always to be present, but sweet, the work, the delight of accomplishment in finishing a project or part of you. The I touch and was with you. I hid my deepest desires within your chest, within your body, writing my words on you, sealing my thoughts forever inside you, glued within the layers of relationship as we grew together. I miss you and I feel you now. Our relationship was easy for the physicalness we shared.
Jane McKinney of Bellmead United Methodist Church in Nashville. Through her art, connecting people to faith. This is Connection. Earlier in the program, we were talking to Bill Hines about his depiction in wood of scenes and characters from the Bible and about the value of symbols in art. After hearing from Jane McKinney, we became interested in the creative process that he goes through and why.
the process is actually a very personal kind of thing. What I see in the piece of wood and how that begins to come out as the sculpture proceeds, my familiarity with scripture allows me to see within pieces of sculpture what particular story might fit. Then after the piece of sculpture is completed, in my estimation, that's when its real value begins. People, when they find out that I do wood sculpturing, then they want to talk about it. And this gives me the opportunity to talk about God and his work and his movement and what he has done in history, and a very natural way of expressing to very secular groups of people who appreciate the sculpture but have never had any exposure to the message itself. And it's a sort of an indirect kind of way that then becomes direct without really trying to impose and to force people. It becomes a way of witness, and that's proved to be very valuable to me, because I can't collar people like some and just grab hold of them and work them over. I can't do that. It's just not part of my personality. But if a person asks, I can share. Does God really care about me as a person? And if he does, can he use my personality the way I am without me forcing myself to be something I'm not? And I've decided he can. And so I try to do it in my way. And that's what I'm trying to do.
This is Connection, and we're talking to Bill Hines about Christian art and the Christian artist.
What I have seen is that there are Christian artists who are feeling a deep concern to express their artistic creativity for God, for the church, but there haven't been many avenues for this. There haven't been many openings. The mood in a lot of the art world that you see is not toward message art that the Christian would have to say. There's message art, and there's good message art, but it isn't exactly what the Christian has to say about God, about Christ, about the love of God or the care of God. It's message that has to do with the agony of man, and I think Christian has something to say about that too, but there are some dimensions in art that have been empty, and I think many Christians are beginning to produce pieces. Christians are beginning to feel we're having avenues now. We can produce art, it can be shown, people can appreciate, and maybe we're moving back toward a renaissance in Christian art again. I hope we are. I would say that anybody who has any talent in any of the areas, whether it be music or sculpture or painting or whatever, that the very best thing that they could possibly do would be to dedicate that talent for the good of man and for the good of God, and then just express what creative talent they have for those ends. And it would be my estimation that that could make a tremendous contribution to many of our lives, to share those things that are deep inside them that God has placed there or they feel ought to be shared with others.
Bill Hines of Sydney, Ohio. This is Connection.
What do you think? Are we gonna stay lost in the maze of mind games, power plays? Or are we gonna take the chance of a lifetime to see the light of day? What will we see when we've used up the last supplies of rainbows and butterflies? I keep
We live in complex and troubling times. Now, I know you get tired of hearing that, but it is true. The issues and decisions of national and global importance which face you each day are not easy ones. We're too often pitted against one another over these issues when they become personal, when they affect our lives and the lives of our families. There are a lot of different kinds of people who call themselves Christians, and sometimes we joke about it. But when controversy shakes things up, and all these people come down on opposite sides of an issue, the humor usually doesn't last very long. You know, that's unfortunate, but that's the way it is. We have to call them like we see them. 2 weeks ago, Dr. Wendell Wirt, a nuclear scientist from New Mexico, was on Connection. He saw no conflict between his faith and his involvement in the development of nuclear power and the disposal of nuclear waste. Here's some of what he said.
I think if I were torn between my work and any doubt about whether it was a Christian or moral thing to do, I would have a very difficult time going ahead. But because I feel very genuinely that this is an urgent problem, a problem which must be solved, and I find myself in a position to do my best to solve this problem.
Knowing that there are at least two sides to this issue, we went to Newton, New Hampshire to hear from another person very much concerned about the development of nuclear energy and the stewardship of the environment. She's Lucille Gunderson of Newburyport United Methodist Church, a housewife and a mother. Like Dr. Wirt, Lucille believes that she has to face the world with her understanding of the gospel. But unlike Dr. Wirt, she feels that she must take a stand against the development of nuclear power. This past year, Lucille became involved in a demonstration protesting the establishment of a nuclear power station in Seabrook, New Hampshire, just 10 miles from her home. 180 people were arrested in that incident, but Lucille and her family believe that there was no other alternative.
Yes, we wanted to join this, knowing full well that they were nonviolent, but radical. They were starting to hit the streets. They weren't content any longer with just writing to congressmen and to the NRC, which is the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, or the Environmental Protection Agency, and all the other people who were involved in licensing and approving of these plants. They had just given up on that procedure and said, you know, we really have to start to hit the streets. We have to start a lot of public education. We really have to make a much stronger stand than we've been making. And we agreed with that. The more we learned, the more we were against the nuclear power plant. And funny, as I say, at that time, went over that line and said, okay, we've reached the point now where we need to make a stronger stand and take a stronger stand.
For Lucille, getting to where she is now was not easy. She had first to experience a struggle within herself, a struggle to find out at what point her faith demanded that she proclaim, "Here I stand."
We believe that God has given us what is necessary for man to survive. But we believe that man is using it in such a way that man is going to cause his own destruction and not survive. How can I be involved with a religion based on love and at the same time be leaving the kind of a legacy that we're leaving? How can I, knowing that if I support nuclear power plants being built, that I'm also supporting a very high cancer rate? The cancer rate in the areas surrounding nuclear power plants for leukemia alone are like 39% higher incident of leukemia around the power plants because of the emissions that are coming out of those plants. I can't support something like that and still say, yes, love your neighbor.
Lucille Gunderson of Newton, New Hampshire. This is Connection. You know, we call this program Connection for a very good reason. This is your program, all of you, and there are a lot of you out there, we're trying to bring you together, to connect you to one another, because you all have something to say that the rest of us should hear. Of course, it's not easy getting you all together, and sometimes we miss somebody. But we have a lot of nice people all over the country helping us, correspondents. They talk to you and send us, the writers and producers, what you've told them. And then, with a little bit of electronic wizardry, we send it all back to you. We do it because... Well, G.K. Chesterton, the English journalist, probably summed it up better than I could when he said, "Let your religion be less of a theory and more of a love affair." Write to us. We want to hear from you. We're at Box 6, Nashville, Tennessee. That's Post Office Box 6, Nashville, Tennessee, 37202. Connection is produced for you with love by all of us at United Methodist Communications. I'm Bill Richards. Connection.